We're going to begin tonight with Malachim Beis, Perek Tes Vav, Pasuk Lamed Beis, so chapter 15, verse 32. And what had happened last time, for those who weren't here, is that we spent the evening discussing 5 to 6 kings in Malchus Yisrael, some of the last kings in the northern kingdom, and we're basically up to the last king. The last king took over. The last king is named Hoshea ben Ela, and we're going to learn about him actually in Perek Yud Zayin. But for tonight, for the rest of Perek Tes Vav, and for all of Perek Tes Zayin, the last of chapter 15 and all of chapter 16, we go back to the southern kingdom, back to Malchus Yehuda. And if you wanted to structure our evening, you know, kind of like the Seder, to start with the bad and end with the good, we're going to do the opposite. We're going to be starting with the good and go to the bad. And we almost seem to be heading towards a little bit of a cycle in the Malchus Yehuda of having an excellent king, followed by a son of his who's wicked, followed somehow miraculously by a son who's a tzaddik, and again by a son who's extremely wicked. Definitely the next four follow in that approach, that pattern. Why that is, the bigger picture, we're not really to understand, because as of right now, it seems that the kings are going in, you know, getting better. So why it happens, I think we won't know. So we'll pick up Pasuk Lamed Beis. Bishnas Shtayim Lefekach Ben Remaliyahu Melech Yisrael. It was in the second year of the reign of Pekach Ben Remaliyahu up in the northern kingdom, in Malchus Yisrael. Malach Yosam ben Uziyahu Melech Yehuda. Yosam, the son of Uziyahu, became king of the southern kingdom of Yehuda. And we had pointed out, and we'll mention this a little later tonight, we had pointed out that Yosam was involved in the government before he actually became king. The Pasuk had told us, if you have the book, you could just, or actually, no, it's in Perek Tes Vav. If you go back, if you look at Perek Tes Vav, Pasuk, hey, Vayinaga Hashem es Hamelech, Vayhi Mitzorad Yomoso, that Uziyahu was struck by Hashem with a plague of tzaras that lasted from a certain time of his kingship until the day of his death. Vayesha Beveis Hachavshis, and he sat in some type of secluded location.
Isolation.
V'Yosam ben Hamelech, and Yosam, the son of the Melech, al Habayis. He was kind of in charge of the palace. Shofet etz am ha'aretz, and he judged the people of the land. So he was involved in royal activities while he was still what we would call the ben hamelech, while he was still a prince. And he becomes king. We're reading about when he becomes king. We had cited that when we learned that pasuk, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, that we had cited that some mafarshim were of the opinion that actually Uziyahu got the tzaras when Yosam was still too young. And some type of, you know, leadership of governmental officials ran the country until Yosam was able to at least act like a king. Until, you know, you'd call him the prince-elect, the king-elect. But he was not king, and we're going to mention that again tonight. So it's in the second year of Pekach Remaliyahu, this Yosam, the son of Uziyahu, melech. This means he becomes king. His father had passed away, Uziyahu had died, and then he becomes king. Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Ben Esrim v'chamei shana haya b'malcha. He was 25 years old when he became king. V'sheish esrei shana malach b'Yerushalayim, and for 16 years he reigned in Yerushalayim. V'shem imo, the name of his mother, was Yerusha bas Tzadok, Yerusha, the daughter of Tzadok. Now, it's you kind of ask yourself the question, his father Uziyahu did not remain Yashar his whole life. We saw that his father's sin was that his father, at one point in his life, decided he's going to bring the Ketores. He's not going to just like sponsor it. He's going to go to the Beis HaMikdash, walk right into the Beis HaMikdash, and offer up the Ketores. And we saw that it was actually the way Chazal and Divrei Yamim understand, it was in the Beis HaMikdash that he got struck with the Tzaras. So it was clearly the punishment that came for you know, overstepping his bounds. He's a king, he's not a Kohen. So he got a reign officially of 52 years long, Uziyahu. His son, who we're going to describe as literally one of the most righteous kings that we've ever had. You know, we're going to put him in very good company, as we will in a couple of minutes. And he's only king for 16 years. You know, so the bottom line is that we don't know HaKadosh Baruch Hu's cheshbon. You know, we sometimes talk about it in the context of a person's life, how long a person lives. This is in the context of being a king, that just because he was a righteous king, so he was, maybe Klal Yisrael was only deserving to have whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu's cheshbon was. But it's a, you know, for us the innocent reader, you're kind of asking yourself, you know, why only 16 years? Why didn't he get one of those nice 40? We always talk about the 40 years, that David had 40 years and Shlomo had 40 years. 40 is this nice round number that, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu led the people for 40 years. So why not Yosam? Okay, it's a question. Pasuk Lamed Dalid. Vayas ha-yasher b'nei Hashem. He did what was yasher, what was straight in the eyes of Hashem. Kechol asher asa Uziyahu aviv asa. Everything that his father had done and did, he did. But we actually know this from the totality, is that he never had the mistakes that his father had made. So therefore, he actually. The fact that it's saying he went and did exactly what his father did, that's more highlighting the beginning of his father's reign. When Uzziah was young, he also did everything right. Pasuk Lamed Hey, however, Rak Habamos Lo Saru. He was not able to remove the Bamos. Oud Ha'am Mizabchim Umekatrim V'Bamos. The people were still offering and giving incense on these private Mizbechos. But again, we need to stress here, because it's going to be in contrast to what happens in the next parak, all of the sacrifices that took place on those private mizbechos were for Hashem. There were karbanos and incense offerings that were offered to God, to Hashem. And there it wasn't even a hint of avodah zarah. It was usher, but there is a big difference to doing something that's usher and doing avodah zarah. And the pasuk continues, Hu bana eshar beis Hashem ha'elyon. He built a certain gate of the Beis HaMikdash. What does that mean, that he built a certain gate? There's a certain shar, ha'elyon, this upper gate of the Beis Hashem, meaning of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Radak thinks that either this gate was built by Shlomo HaMelech and it had fallen down, or it had been destroyed, as we had read, that there were some times that walls were breached and things of that nature. And so Yosam took it upon himself to rebuild, or it meant that he kind of enhanced, that he took a specific area of the Beis HaMikdash, of a certain gate that went into the Beis HaMikdash, and he updated it, he renovated. And so there's definitely something positive in Malachim here being talked about his activities. V'yeser divrei Yosam v'chos harasa. The other aspects of his kingship, everything that he did, Halohim Ksuvim al Sefer Devrayam la Malch Yehuda, are they not written in the daily chronicles of the books of kings of Yehuda? Pasuk Lamed Zayin. By Yamim Mahim, in those days, Heichel Hashem Lashliach bi Yehuda Ritzin Melech Aram Vespekach Ramal Yahu. I'm going to read the Pasuk literally. That it was in those days that Hashem began to send forth against Yehuda two kings, Ritzin, who was the king of Aram, and Pekach Remaliyahu, who was the king of the north. Now, the simple understanding of the pasuk sounds like that while we have this righteous king Yosam, during his time, Hashem started sending enemies against the Jewish people. Enemies against the Jewish people of Yehuda. Who were the enemies? Aram, from the northeast, and Malchus Yisrael from the direct, you know, north and northwest. So it makes it, the psukim definitely make it sound like the attack is coming during the time of Yosam. Well, all the Mefarshim are very bothered. They're bothered because, first of all, there's a pasuk in the next parak that has the word Uz. Uz, then these nations started attacking. I mean, these nations are going to attack. There is going to be a type of civil war. Malchus Yisrael is going to attack, and this king of Aram is also going to attack Yehuda, perhaps at the same time, together. And so the fact that the next parak says it's us, it's then, that doesn't make it, That's one strike against it happening during the time of Yosam, the king that we're learning about. The other thing is that this Yosam was so righteous. We're going to see even some more sources off the page that describe how righteous he was. So it doesn't make sense why his kingdom is being attacked. So the Mepharshim all basically, the Rishonim all try to explain a different way. So the Radak and the Ralbag say that it means in Yosam's era. It means in the overall time period of Yosam, but they did not attack while he was alive. It was actually in his son's times. And once we get later on tonight to read about his son, you're all going to understand perfectly well why his son was deserving to be attacked. Rashi and the Abarbanel say that it was kind of like the incitement, the things started to get, the ball started getting rolling. Maybe there were threats that were being thrown. But again, the attack did not happen until his son Achaz was the king, and perhaps others say that really Klal Yisrael was maybe deserving of the attack happening during the time of Yosam, but it was that Yosam was so righteous, right? It's that the king was so righteous that he was able to, his merit was able to hold off the attack while he was still alive. Pasuk Lamed Ches. Vayishkav Yosam imavosav. Yosam lay with his forefathers. Vayikaver imavosav beir David aviv. And he was buried with his forefathers in the city of David, his father. Vayimloch Achaz benotachtav. His son Achaz took over for him. It's unique to have the word aviv there. The fact that it has the word David Aviv, that's not common. To say Be'ir David, that's normal, because that's like the name of the city was Ir David. But to say Ir David Aviv, it's highlighting the fact that he's compared to his father, to his forefather David. I made a slight error in that you actually do need this copy of Divrei Hayamim. So we're going to pass around a Divrei Hayamim, a very short Divrei Hayamim. And if there's, hopefully there's enough. If not, we could share. It's not too many psukim. It's a very short perek where in Perek Chav Zayin of Divrei Hayamim Beis. So it's a very short perek talking about Yosam. But we'll hear a little bit more, just slightly more about the significance of his actions. So here in Divrei Hayamim Beis, Perek Chaf Zayin, chapter 27. Hopefully everyone's getting. So the first pasuk is nothing new. I'll read the first pasuk, and if you don't have it, don't worry. It's nothing new. Ben Esrim v'chameh shana Yosam b'malcho v'sheis esrei shana malach v'yushalayim v'sheimimo Yerusha, spelled with a hey. I don't know if there's any difference. Bas tzaduk. Fine. Now pasuk Beis is going to embellish slightly on what we saw in Malachim. That here it says, Vayas HaYashar Bene Hashem, nothing new, he did what was Yashar. Chol Asher Asa Uziyo Aviv, Rak Lo Va El Heichal Hashem. Here it highlights the fact that he did not go into the Heichal. He did not go into the Heichal of Hashem. He didn't go into the Beis HaMikdash. Va'ora'a Mashchisim, but the people weren't doing such good things. But he didn't go into the Beis Hashem. The Radak on this Pasuk has two different ways of viewing it. Is it that he went to the Beis HaMikdash, but he did not do the Avodah like his father did? Or perhaps maybe he understood, and this is perhaps the more profound or psychological approach that if you'd like, the Radak says maybe he almost swore off going to Beis HaMikdash, that he recognized the risk. His father had sinned by going to Beis HaMikdash, the power of being the Melech, when being in the temple, when being in the Beis HaMikdash, was like so tempted his father that his father fell in that area, so he himself kind of put up a fence that he wouldn't go to the Beis HaMikdash at all. Which, you know, on the one hand, you'd say that on the one hand, you're supposed to be able to learn how to control your impulses. On the other hand, you're supposed to try to, where you have to know yourself. That's why one of my Rabbi, Rabbi Shechter, explains in Pirkei Avos when it says, Asyu Siag LaTorah. You're supposed to make a fence for the Torah. So we know that the Rabbanim come and make a fence. That's why most of the laws of the Rabbanim are in the quote-unquote negative. There aren't too many positive laws of the Rabbanim. We have certain things like tonight is Purim Katan. So a month from now we'll have Purim. Purim is a mitzvah midrabbanan that's definitely positive. It's a positive. You have to do things. You have to read the Megillah. You have to give mashlach manos. Most of the derabbanans are in the quote-unquote negative. They're what we call a gzeira. They're a decree. The whole idea of muksa is only, right? It's a very hard concept for kids. Kids, they think if you turn on a light on Shabbos, it's muksa. It's not. We try teaching at home. Turning on a light is usser. It's prohibited. You end up, not necessarily a light per se, but many things on Shabbos could be a biblical prohibition, while muksa is only a rabbinic prohibition. It's there to protect against, if I'm not allowed to pick up a pen, I won't come to write with a pen. So the rabbis went ahead and invented certain things. So asyu sag l'Torah, the make a fence for the Torah, that's what the Rabbanim did. But we read it in Pirkei Avos. So Rabbi Shachter used to explain to us that each person, you have to know what your weakness is. If you know that you have an issue with a certain Aveira, and you read all the Halacha, and still, even if you try to quote-unquote keep Halacha, you're going to be tempted. Asyu sag. Make for yourself a fence. Figure out your own fence, right? Lahavdil, in the world of dieting. So some people know if they want to be makbid on a diet, they should not walk by the bakery. Now, is it usher to walk by the bakery? It's not usher to walk by the bakery. But if you're trying to stay away from something, you stay away. Your person has a problem with Lashon Hara. So they have to figure it out. Maybe I shouldn't spend my whole afternoon hanging out, at the water cooler in the office, because that's I'm not in an office, and we don't have a water cooler, so I don't know what happened. But they talk about the water cooler. So this lo baal heichal Hashem, according to the Radak, he might have swore it off. He might have said, you know what, I'm staying away. And that's some, perhaps we could learn from that. Now in Gimel, Dalet, and Hey, we hear about activities that we didn't hear about in Malachim. We hear about that he built that Shar Beis Hashem HaElyon, Pasuk Gimel. We also hear about Uvachomas HaOfel Bana LaRov, and the wall of the Ofel. I'm not sure what that is. I did not have a chance to go through all the Mefarshim on Divrei Yamim, but he built more. The Pasuk Dalet, the Arim Bana. He built cities, Bahar Yehuda, around the Hare Yehuda, uvecharashim bana, and in the forest, biranos, umigdalim, he built castles and towers. He was a builder. Pasuk Hey, v'hu nilcham in melech b'nei Amon. Not only was he a builder, but he went to war. He went to war to expand territory and expand income for the kingdom. Vayechazak aleihem, and he was victorious. Now we understand why we're painting him like he was a tzaddik. So it makes sense that you're going to be victorious. Vayidnu lo b'nei Amon bashana ahi mea kikar kesef. That year, the b'nei Amon gave to him a tribute that was 100 talents of silver, the aseres alafim korim chitim, and 10,000 measures of wheat, usaorim, and 10,000 measures of barley, aseres alafim. Zos heishivu lo b'nei Amon. This is what the b'nei Amon gave to him. Uvashana hashenis v'hashlishis. Makes in the second year, in the third year, he got an annual tribute. It seems that Amon once again became like a vassal state to the Malchus Yehuda, and they had to pay their tax. They paid their tax in silver, they paid their tax in wheat, and in barley. Vayischazek Yosam. Yosam became very mighty. Why? Ki heichin derachav l'fnei Hashem elokav. Because he ordered his ways, he patterned himself, v'halachta bedrachav. He followed what it says in the Torah says, you're supposed to go on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ways. That's what Yosam did. He went in the ways of Hashem. And then Zayin Ches and Tes pretty much finish like our psukim did in Malachim Beis. So this Yosam in both Malachim, I would say Malachim paints him in the least as a tzaddik. He seems to be righteous in Malachim. Then you read Divrei Hayamim, he sounds even more impressive. So now we come to Chazal and Rashi. So if you take a look at the sheet that I gave you that has on top Yecheskel, it has numbered sources. So the first four sources we took a look at last week, and so we won't take a look at them again. But the last three on this, the last three sources on the sheet relate to Yosam. The Gemara in source number 5 in Mesechah Sukkah has nothing to do with Mesechah Sukkah. So after you read it, you're going to ask yourselves, why in the world is this in Maseches Sukkah? So what happens is that the Talmud Bavli and the Talmud Yerushalmi, they used to be oral. They were conversations that took place in the study halls, the Bati Midrashim of Bavel. So a lot of times, if there was a non-common author of a statement, right? Not so often was this person quoted in a study hall. So the second his statement was quoted, someone in the back would pipe up, oh, that guy, that Amora, I don't know if they call it, we call them Amora, I don't know what they call that Rav, he also said this and said that. And they would kind of group the three statements of this one Rav together, even though each one has nothing to do with each other. And sometimes you mix a halachic statement with more of what we call a agadic statement, non-specific law-oriented parts of the Talmud. And so this statement is being made in source number 5. V'amar Chizkia, amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. So this is in a series of teachings that was taught by an Amora whose name was Chizkia, who was quoting from Rabbi Yirmiyah, all in the name of the Tana, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, famous Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, famous from Lag BaOmer, but a regular Tana as well. The Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai said the following statement, which I'll tell you, it's a challenge to fully understand the statement. I don't know if someone like myself can fully understand the statement. But it's going to maybe be one of those things where they don't say this about you and me, and specifically what they say about Yosem in the end. So this is what Rav Shimon ben Yochai made the following statement. Yachol ani liftar es kol ha'olam kulo min hadin miyom shenivresi ad ata. My merit, me, Rav Shimon ben Yochai, I could exempt the entire world from all the wrong that they did from the day that I was created until now. Which, let's say he was making the statement when he's 75 years old. So he's saying, I could handle, you know, the demerits of Klal Yisrael, or of the whole world, for 75 years. V'ilmale Eliezer b'ni imi. And if we were putting this on scales, and if on my side I also had my son Eliezer, the famous son who was with him in the cave for all those years, miyom shenivra ha'olam v'yad achshav, we'd be able to handle all of the world's averos from the time the world was created until now. Which, if they were probably living, I don't know, sometime around the year, 150, 175 of our common counting. So he's basically saying, I can handle, I don't know what it is, about almost 4,000 years of averus. So what do you expect next? If he wants to try, don't read the next word. If he wants to tackle, he's going to throw out, you know what, if we had a third person on our scale, we could handle all the averus from the time the world was created until Mashiach. So you're thinking he's going to pick Moshe, Avram, you know? What does he say? V'ilmale Yosam ben Uziyahu imanu. If King Yosam was with us, miyom shenivra olam ad sofo. We would be able to, again, what it means to handle the world's averus, I don't understand. But Reb Shimon bar Yochai was standing there at least 1,000 years after this king, Yosam, had lived. And he said his tradition, Reb Shimon bar Yochai's tradition about Yosam, was that he was such a righteous individual that he would be able to join Reb Shimon bar Yochai and his son to handle the world's averus. It's very, very high praise. So Rashi, in source number 6 on the Gemara, Rashi picks up on Yosam, and Rashi explains, well, you see two comments of Rashi. We see one comment of Rashi on this Gemara in Maseches Sukkah, and then one comment on Rashi on the Pesukim that we just read in Divrei Hayamim. So in source 6, Rashi says, Yosam ben Uziyahu, tzaddik haya. He was a tzaddik. The Anav Yoser Mishar Malachim. He was considered to be the most humble of all kings. The Zachav B'kibud Aviv. And he merited to properly honor his father. The Olav Ne'emar. And it was about Yosam that was said later on by the prophet Malachi, where the prophet says, Ben Yechabed Av. A son will honor his father. The prime example in our tradition's eyes of a son who honors his father properly is Yosam. Shekol Hayamim Shahaya Aviv Mitzora. All the days that his father was a leper, all the days that his father Uzziyahu had Saras, v'hu hayashofet am haaretz, and he Yosam was the prince judging the land. Kidichsiv, as we saw in the pasuk, we cited it again tonight. V'Yosam ben Hamelach al habayis, Yosam was in charge of the palace, shofet, and he judged the people. Lo natal alav keser malchus bechayev. He never would allow the crown to be put on his head while his father was still alive. The chol dinin shahaya dun, and every single time he gave a judgment, omran b'shem aviv. He always said, in the name of my father the king, in the name of my father the king. You think about it, it sounds like it was a number of years where his father's put away, his father's like is secluded. And probably everyone in the government doesn't like the fact that who wants a king who's secluded? We've seen situations where rebellions happen so quickly. This would have been peaceful. No one would have known about it. Probably wouldn't even have to tell the king. He just has to take the crown, put it on his head, and start acting as king. And he never goes one hair's breadth to take away from the covet of his father. Rashi says that's perhaps the thinking behind Reb Shimon Bar Yochai's statement. And I was thinking when you read the words of Rashi, and Yosam is defined as Anav Yoser Mishar Malachim, he's the most humble of all the kings. So the truth is that there are two thoughts that go through my mind. Number one is we know that the person who's described as Anav Mikol Adam is Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu is described as the most humble person that ever lived. But Moshe Rabbeinu was not a king. I'm not saying Yosam was on a chas v'shalom, I'm not here, but to the fact that Moshe's accolade is he's an anav, and Yosam's accolade is an anav, it's not bad company to be praised in the same area as Moshe Rabbeinu. The other idea perhaps goes back, this is just coming to mind right now that I keep saying the word anav out loud, is that the first king, we go way, way, way back to when we met Shaul HaMelech in Perek Tes of Shmuel Aleph. So Shaul HaMelech was chosen to be king seemingly because of his humility. In the end, we saw many examples how he was actually too humble. He was too humble in certain areas. And when you're a king, you have to be humble in the right areas, and you sometimes have to be able to be the leader. And that was sometimes that perhaps was Shaul's downfall, is that he was a little too humble for all of his life. But the trait of humility is not something that's negative. When you take a look you go back to Sefer Devarim. Perek Yud Zayin, which is the paragraph in Parsha Shoftim, which describes what a Jewish king is supposed to be. Som Tosem Melech HaMelech. The paragraph, what we call a Parsha of the Melech. So what the king has all these extra mitzvos, and many of them are in the negative. He's not supposed to have too many horses. He's not supposed to have too many wives. He's not supposed to have too much possessions. He's not supposed to allow himself to become haughty, specifically. He has to write his own Sefer Torah to keep it next to him, to keep him in check. The idea is that he's a representative of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we've seen it, right? His father said, Uzziyahu said, why am I going to bring the Ketores? I'm a melech, and Hashem is a melech. So this melech should bring the Ketores to that melech. He talked himself into that. One of his other ancestors, people started worshiping him as a god. So this Yosam seemed to have the ability to be a proper anav, and to be a prop, keep it in check. As the pasuk said in Divrei Hayamim, that what happened? Vayischazik Yosam. Why was he so mighty? Ki heichin drachav lifnei Hashem. He nullified himself in front of Hashem. That'll be a successful king. So much so that we finish this sheet. If we take a look at source number 7, Rashi in Divrei Hayamim, we won't read the entire Rashi. Rashi says, "Kechol asher asa Uzziyahu aviv." Rashi then cites the Gemara. "V'im haya Yosam ben Uzziyahu imi haynu mekablin aleinu me'avram ad sof hadoros." We'd be able to have the sins from the time of Avram, like the beginning of time, until sof hadoros. What Rashi says here differently. Why was Yosam in that role of being such a righteous king? Shebechol hamalachim shelafanov ulaacharav matzinu bohem chet chutz miYosam. The only king that never sinned as king was Yosam. And Rashi goes on, it's a little bit of like a review. Rashi quotes the things that each king did wrong. And if you skip all the way to the bottom, Aval Yosam lo nimtza bo shum dofi. By Yosam, there's nothing. Now listen, he doesn't make it. There is a list. We point this out from time to time. There is a list. The Gemara lists the four individuals who died without ever doing an Avera, period. And he's not on that list. So what is it? It means that he didn't sin as a king. As a king, meaning, you know, we're not here to talk Lashon Hara about him, but you know, maybe one time he didn't make a bracha, maybe one time he didn't. These sins are more sins on a kingly level. So Yosam's unique, right? We've never had that before. Even David HaMelech, even Shlomo HaMelech, we pointed out. David said to Nasan Anavi, Chatasi. Chatasi means I sinned. We spent a lot of time talking about what that meant. But the fact that Rashi, again, this is not me. I'm not making a declaration that every single king sinned except for Yosam. Rashi just did that. So what we see is that it's almost like we build the case. When you start in Sefer Malachim, you see Yosam, he's in a positive light. You start reading the Divrei Hayamim, his stock goes even up. Then you take a look at the statement of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai with the two possible explanations of Rashi, and he seems to be quite the impressive king. What perhaps is only the more troubling is that now that we shift back to Malachim and we begin Perek Tezayin together, chapter 16, you're kind of going to be struck with how could someone like Yosam have a son like Achaz? His son is Achaz, and his son is now taking over after a relatively righteous grandfather and a super duper righteous father. And the truth is that every person is their own person. Everyone can make their free will choices.
I'm just curious, the name. You know, do we know anybody who names
Yotam? Anyone know? I mean, I would imagine Israelis would have to step in on this one. Yotam. Anyone know anyone named Yotam? Sounds like a good name for an Israeli tour guide.
Yes, it does.
Right. Yeah. See, I would say if you're going to bring back a name from the past, go for it. You know. I don't know. What was your grandson recently?
So his name is Eitan Tuvia.
Okay. So you know. So tell him. You know, in the future, maybe Yosam, they can bring it back. Right. I mean, yeah. I don't know if I would be able to get away with this one, but I'll bring it up with the board.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but it's a very good point. Why are people not named? Now you'll know exactly why people are not named Achaz. Pas Perek Tazayin, Pasuk Aleph, Bishna Sheva Esrei Shana LePekach Ven Remaliyahu. In the 17th year of Pekach Remaliyahu, who was the king of the north, Malach Achaz ben Yosam Melch Yehuda. Achaz, the son of Yosam, became king in Malchus Yehuda, in the southern kingdom. Ben Esrim Shana, Achaz b'Malcha. He was 20 years old when he became king. V'sheish Esrei Shana, Malach b'Yerushalayim. And for 16 years he ruled in Yerushalayim, the same as his father. And immediately, in the same pasuk, v'lo asa hayasher b'nei Hashem elokav k'David aviv. He did not do that which was yashar in the eyes of Hashem, his God, like David, his ancestor. Now, I don't know if there's any significance to this, but it caught my eye that if you add up the letters of Achaz, it equals 16. So he ruled for 16 years, his name is 16. I don't know if there's any connection to that, probably not. But we're in the Young Israel of Long Beach, and the Mar de Astro would probably want me to say that. So Achaz is king for 16 years. Now, right now, I've kind of colored the picture here. I've told you that Achaz is really bad. Well, that probably wasn't nice of me to do, because you should read each, although once you get to the next pasuk, he's done. But the Mefarshim are bothered by the phrase "Velo Asa Hayasher Beinei Hashem Elokav KiDavid Aviv." He didn't go. He didn't do that. What was straight in the eyes of Hashem as God, like David. So a lot of times that makes it sound like, okay, listen, he was like 90% good. He just wasn't like David. This guy was a scoundrel. This guy, he perhaps is the worst king in Malchus Yehuda history. Just that's, you know, listen, thank God there have been mostly righteous kings. But he, it sounds like at the end, when we read it in totality, he gives some of the kings of the north a run for their money in terms of their wickedness. He's ends up on a level close to Achav, if not equal. So why would the Pasuk describe it that he didn't do Yashar Bein Hashem kidavid Aviv? So that leads some of the Mefarshim to explain that maybe it didn't happen right away, and that there was a little bit of a process to, now he wasn't king for that long, but there was a little bit of a process to him going off the path. And that maybe in the beginning of his reign, he was doing things that were okay, just not like David, and then it kind of snowballed from there. The next pasuk is extremely, extremely troubling. Pasuk Gimel. Vayelech b'derech Malchei Yisrael. And he went in the path of the Malchei Yisrael. He went in the path of the kings of the northern kingdom, which is symbolic of going in the ways of Avodah Zarah, idol worship. And if you don't think so based on the first part of the Pasuk, the second part of the Pasuk reveals and continues. Vigam, and also continuing on what is an Avodah Zarah type of path, Vigam es beno he'avir ba'esh. He passed his son through fire, Kisavos Hagoyim, like the abominable practices of the other nations, Asher Horish Hashem Osam Mipnei Bnei Yisrael, that Hashem chased out in front of Klal Yisrael. Hashem got rid of these nations when Klal Yisrael came into the land of Canaan. And yet he did this. This practice is mentioned all the way back in the book of Vayikra. It was the idol called Molech. And there's a machlokas Rishonim how this idol was worshipped. According to Rashi, it was a little. Rashi is, I guess, he's a little bit more liberal in how he explains how they worshipped this idol of Molech. They basically built two like lines of fires, and in the middle you were able to walk in unharmed, and the parent would like carry the child through the fires. The Ramban. This is just factual, even though it's you can't even think about it, said it actually involved passing a child through real fire to the extent that the child might be fully sacrificed, and this was child sacrifice to the Avodah Zarah. So here you have a Melech in Yerushalayim who has David HaMelech's blood in him, worshipping Avodah Zarah and offering his child to the Molech, which has never, this level has not been done till now, and I can't speak for what comes later. My knowledge is always that way, the chapters that passed. But this is it's such an egregious sin against Hashem. And you know, you don't know, you read these psukim, and again, we always kind of wish, you know, sometimes when you Lahavdal Elef Alfei Havdalah, sometimes when you're reading a really good book or you're watching a really good film, you don't want it to end. You're like, it's so involved in the story. You just want to keep going with the story, but the story ends. So when we read the Tanakh, we really want to know a lot more. We only get to know what Yirmiyahu writes to us, you know, 100, 150 years after this it was. What happened to this son of Yosam that he went off the derech to such an extreme? He's done. We've had kings that overindulge in money and in women and quote unquote the taivas, the natural desires that maybe make sense. And here, not only does he worship Avodah Zarah, but he does it in such an extreme. And then he's not. It's not enough for him. He keeps going, and there's no indication, as I've seen in any of the Mefarshim, as to what started it, and what took him off. You know, so we're stuck with it without knowing, and obviously we understand that he had the ability to make a free choice, and he made a free choice to worship Avodah Zarah, and it hurt him in the end. The miracleship of miracles is that his son is a king that you all know of before coming to the class. His son is King Chizkiyahu, who's mentioned often as a righteous king. So it's the most amazing thing in the world that such an individual ends up having a son like Chizkiyahu. But again, each one got to make their own free choices and had to live with the consequences. Pasuk Dalet. Vayizabeach vayakter babamos v'alagvaos. He sacrificed on the bamos, on the private mizbechos, animal sacrifices and incense. V'alagvaos, and he would do this on the hilltops. V'sachas kol etz ra'anan, and under every leafy tree. This pasuk contains with it two very poisonous facts. Number one is that he made it his mission to turn those bamos, those private altars that all of his ancestors were not able to get the people to get rid of, but at least, as we pointed out even again tonight, they were worshiping Hashem. He wanted to poison those bamos and have those bamos be used for Avodah Zarah, encouraging the people to worship Avodah Zarah. And he also, this language, you know, why are we being told that he's offering sacrifices on the hilltops and under every tree? He's trying, and this Rabbi Alex Israel explains a little bit, it's almost like he's trying to like create like a grassroots movement of Avodah Zarah that will make Avodah Zarah accessible wherever you are. Every hilltop will be able to worship Avodah Zarah. Every leafy tree will be able to have Avodah Zarah. That he is not only, it's like he's so obsessed with worshiping Avodah Zarah that it's not enough for him to do it in his privacy of his own. Right? Sometimes a person has a certain taiva. Okay, so behind closed doors, whatever is going to happen. But to then to spread it in the land to such an extent, and in your role as king, you can be very successful as that. He does it to an extreme. Pasuk Hey. Now you understand. Oz, then, in response to him spreading Avodah Zarah throughout the land, Yale Ritzin Melech Aram, Upechach Ben Remaliyahu Melech Yisrael. The king of Aram, whose name now is Ritzin, and Pekach Ben Remaliyahu, who we know is the king of the north, Yerushalayim L'Melchama. Ya'ale, they went up to Yerushalayim for a war. Vayatsuru al Achaz velo yachlu lilachim. They besieged Achaz velo yachlu lilachim. They were not able to defeat him. So why are they going to war against Achaz? So there's some who suspect that what was happening in the world at that time and in this region of the world, we already saw it, that there was a superpower building, and that was Ashur or Assyria. The ones who eventually conquer the 10 tribes, and the ones who come very close to conquering the southern kingdom as well, if it wasn't for a miracle happening, Yerushalayim would have fallen to Sancheiriv, the Melech Ashur, and it would have been, you know, the exile of the 10 tribes would have been the exile of the 12 tribes, and obviously, Kadosh Baruch Hu probably would have figured out a way to save the day a different way, but Jewish history would have been quite different. The Beis HaMikdash would have been destroyed then, more than 130 years before it actually was. So Ashur was building up as a superpower. The other smaller nations were perhaps trying to build an alliance to fight against Ashur. So the Melech Yisrael and the Melech of Aram, the Jewish king of the north, and the king of Aram, they were in cahoots. They wanted the king of the south, they wanted the king of Yehuda, this Achaz, they wanted him to join along with them. But for whatever reason, Achaz did not, this aspect might have been smart on his part, he didn't want to attack Ashur. But I don't know if he realized that when he was going to stand firm in his ground, that he was going to be attacked. Now the Navi is telling us specifically, there's a reason why he's being attacked. Not because they're trying to make an alliance, and he's being attacked because of his avodah zarah. So obviously everything needs to work together, but they were not able to defeat him. We'll see the extent when we take a look at some of the other sources. The story of the battle really takes place in three places. It takes place here in Malachim Beis, it takes place in Yeshaya, and it takes place in Divrei Hayamim. So for now, we're going to focus on the story from the perspective of Malachim. So they go up, they go battle, it seems that they set a siege around Yerushalayim, but they weren't able to defeat him. But what was at least one of the outcomes of this war? Pasuk Vav. Ba'esahi at that time, Heshiv Ritzin Melech Aram es Elas La'aram. It was at this time that the king of Ritzin was able to capture the city of Elas and bring it to the side of Aram, that's his side, and he kicked out the Jews. Vayinashel, the Mitzvah Sion says, is Hashlacha. He threw it out. He expelled, he evicted the Jews from that town. The Adomim bo Elas, and Edom came to the city of Elas, and they're living there until today. Ariyomazeh, that's a phrase written by Yirmiyahu, who's writing the Sefer. He says Ariyomazeh, meaning for the next 100, 150 years, the city remained an Edomite city. Now the city of Elas began as an Edomite city, began as a city of Edom, and it was conquered by David HaMelech, and it remained under the control of the Malchus Yehuda for a good number of years. And then Edom had taken it back, and Uzziyahu had taken it back to the control of Malchus Yehuda. So this Achaz, his grandfather, Uzziyahu, had taken back the city. Well, who did it belong to originally? We said it belonged to Edom. So this Melech Aram, what did he do? Some Mefarshim seem to understand. He took the city away from Klal Yisrael. It was like he was trying to do right in the world. He gave it back to the original owners. The original owners meaning Edom. So this is also perhaps a sign that maybe the nation of Edom was also on this kind of the alliance of countries that wanted to go up against Ashur. So first we mentioned Aram, and we mentioned the northern kingdom, Malchus Yisrael. Maybe Edom was also included. And so they were in cahoots. So when Aram captured this city, this ancient Edomite city of Elas, gave it back to the Edomites. So Achaz is really in trouble. Achaz is in trouble because he feels that he has nowhere to turn in order to get rid of this problem of the two kings. So what does he do? Pasuk Zayin. Vayishlach Achaz Malachim. Achaz sends messengers El Tiglas Pileser, Melech Ashur, to Tiglas Pileser, who is the king of Ashur, Lamor, saying as follows. Avdecha, your servant, Ubincha, and your son, Ani, I am. I am your servant and I am your son. Alei v'hoshieni, come up and save me. Mikaf melech aram, from the hand of the king of Aram. Umikaf melech Yisrael, and from the clutches of the king of Yisrael. Hakomim alai, who are rising up against me. On the one hand, you might say that aligning yourself with the king of Ashur, on the one hand, you might say that doesn't sound like a bad idea. That if you are being attacked, and there is a superpower somewhere in the world, close by, that you could ask for help. Asking for help doesn't necessarily, in a vacuum, it doesn't necessarily sound like a bad idea. When we see, we won't do it tonight, when we see the psukim in Yeshaya, so Yeshaya told him basically not to do this, that he just had to rely on Hashem. Rabbi Israel points out, right, this phrase, Avdecha ubincha ani, I am your son and I am your servant. In essence, what famous Jewish phrase is he saying to the king of Ashur? Avinu Malkeinu. Right? And when we're davening on Yom Kippur, we say, we are Hashem's Avadim, Hashem is our Melech. We are Hashem's Banim, and Hashem is our Father. His Avodah Zarah mentality is so warped that he's willing to refer to this foreign superpower as his Melech, because he's the Eved, and as his Father, because he's the Bane, and he's not willing to turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, help me. And that, because if you think about it, who's being victorious against him? Who is fighting him? The Malchus Yisrael is deserving of victory? They're not deserving of victory. They haven't had a proper king ever. Right? And what we read about in last parak is that every king was like worse than the other one, and there's so much revolt and bloodshed. This is not a kingdom that's deserving of victory. So why are they deserving, right? And so if you are Achaz, hopefully, we don't know for sure, obviously, hopefully he was somewhat intelligent. So you think to yourself, listen, my father was king for 16 years. There's no problems. I'm king for a couple of years, and there's already problems. Maybe I should look into how I treat my kingdom. Wait, my father never did 1 ounce of Avodah Zarah, and I do Avodah Zarah like nobody. Like nobody's business. Like, but he doesn't. He makes no cheshbon like that, and instead, and even as we'll see when we read the psukim from Yeshaya, even with a navi like Yeshaya standing there and telling him, you know, put your faith in God, he doesn't want anything to do with it, and he puts his full trust into the king of Ashur, and in the end, what happens is that he sets in motion Ashur having what to do with not only the northern lands, but even the southern lands. And like we said, like I mentioned before in passing, it comes down to the need of a miracle to say when Ashur finally after he conquers the whole north, and he starts conquering the southern kingdom, and he's about to sack Yerushalayim, it takes this great miracle of the angel coming overnight and like wiping out the whole army to save Yerushalayim. And where did it start from, Asher having anything to do with this part of the country? It starts with this, quote-unquote, you know, calling out for help. Pasuk Ches, Vayikach Achaz es hakesef yes hazahav. So Achaz took the silver and the gold. Hanimtso beveis Hashem. He went into the treasury of the Beis HaMikdash. Uva Otzer's Beis HaMelech. And he also went into his own treasure house. Vayishlach lemelech Ashur shochad. And he sent to the king of Ashur shochad. He sent a bribe. He sent the tribute. What is it going to cost to get his protection? Pasuk Tes. Vayishma elav melech Ashur. The king of Ashur listened. Vayal melech Ashur el Damesek. Vayispeseha. The Melech of Ashur went against Damascus. Damascus was the capital city of Aram, which was one of the two nations that was attacking. Vayispeseha, and he was able to seize it. Vayagleha Kira. But he exiled the people from Damascus to the city of Kira. Vyesritzin Hamis, and he assassinated the king, Ritzin. So it sounds like to a certain degree, the deal worked. The fact that the pasuk makes mention of what happened to the people of Damascus is very telling. That the people of Damascus were exiled from their own city to the city of Kira, to the city of Kir, that foreshadows the approach of Ashur. Ashur had this approach of exiling. That when they take over a country, they want to immediately uproot the people from place A, move them to place B. No need to kill them. We need to move them to place B because we want them to lose their national identity. If they lose their national identity, then within a couple of months, what are they? Citizens of Ashur, citizens of the Assyrian Empire. If we conquer them and we let them stay in their hometowns, they're always going to think of themselves. Here, the Aram, they'll always think of themselves, we live in Damascus, we are from Aram. And you know, when we get enough power, we'll stand up again and we'll be our own independent nation. And the approach that Ashur took was exiling. And unfortunately, that was the approach, which we're going to read about in Perek Yud Zayin, I believe. That's the approach that he took to the 10 tribes. The reason why the 10 tribes became lost is because that's exactly what he did. He took pockets of individuals from one place and placed them in another place, and it did not allow them to stay together. It didn't allow them, and you know, maybe you know, we could say, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about this more when we deal with it exactly, but if you think about the communal infrastructures that have been developed specifically probably by the community that went to Bavel, went from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, created certain things that we take for granted, like a shul, right? Everyone takes it for granted that in a Jewish community there's a shul. And once there's a shul, so you have a place to daven, you have a place to learn, you have a place to gather. At this time, there's no such thing as a shul. There's no such thing as a shul. There's a Beis HaMikdash. Malchus Yisrael doesn't have anything like that, and they're worshiping Avodah Zarah. So when we, the descendants of the southern kingdom that we were exiled from Eretz Yisrael, but we were sent to Bavel, and it was in Bavel with Nevi'im, with some Nevi'im who are still there, with people like Mordechai tonight, Shushan Purim Katan, with people like Mordechai, with people of that nature, we were able to build an infrastructure. With the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, we were able to build things like davening. There was no davening then, set davening, like we have now. So the things that we have, the sitter that can anchor you, you could be anywhere in the world as long as you have your sitter, and nowadays people have it on their phones. You can daven. You can have a connection to HaKadosh. We created an ability to connect to Hashem without a Beis HaMikdash, out of necessity. Obviously, we're all Meheri Yibana Beis HaMikdash, we all want the Beis HaMikdash to be built. Having the Beis HaMikdash will turn Judaism on its head, you know, in a good way. You know, we'll be bringing karbanos instead of doing, you know, it'll take us, you know, that should be the worst thing that we need to, it'll take us a while to get used to that whole new set of halachas that'll become lemaisa again. But the idea is that the whole ability to carry your Judaism with you was not in play. You put that together with the approach of this Melech Ashur, that he would take you from place A and put you in place B. We can grasp why it was able that 10 tribes would, to some degree, get lost. So Be'ez Hashem, next time, we're going to continue in both Melachim. Here, we got up to Perek, the Pasuk Yud. We're also going to then look at the same exact story as it happens in Yeshaya and as it happens in Divrei Hayamim.